Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce Podcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world. And we're archived on AWFradio.com. Let's go to line number one. Always enjoy talking to this individual. Dorsey Hager is his name. He's executive director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. ColumbusConstruction.org is a website. Twitter handle is BuildCentralOH. Hey, Dorsey, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me back. How is everybody in the winter wonderland that is the North Shore of Ohio, Cleveland?
I'll tell you, it's definitely a slow day here in northeastern Ohio, but we've been really, really fortunate. And you, being in construction, have to be pretty happy with a lot of the projects that are going up around Ohio. And I'll tell you, you probably heard the news yesterday that Sherwin-Williams is going to stay in northeastern Ohio. Did you catch that news?
I did not see the news, but I was with Dave Wondolowski a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about that. I know that he and the Cleveland Building Trade were working really hard and having great conversations with the folks there, and they were very positive and optimistic that was going to happen.
Yeah, they're actually going to split it. They're going to be downtown just west of Public Square. There's a couple of parking lots that actually they were supposed to develop those lots about 20 years ago, and then we had some hard times here in northeastern Ohio, plus the Great Recession, so they've just been parking lots, and now they're going to use those for the downtown headquarters, and then they're going to put the research and technology center, I should call it that, research and technology center, is going to move to Brecksville. And that's the old VA hospital over there. So it's all going to it's all going to stay in Cuyahoga County. That's the good news. And they're talking corporate investment of $600 million. And it probably pales in comparison to what's going on down in Columbus. But
no, that's great. That's great. I'm glad to hear that about Sherwin-Williams. That's awesome. I mean, I know people. You know, when you have some place like that that's in your community for a long time, you grow an affinity and an affection for them. You obviously want to make sure that they stay there for as long as they can. So that's great news. I'm glad it's finally finalized, I guess.
Yeah. When we get Dave on the show, I'd like to get a breakdown on what kind of jobs we're looking at. They want to be moved in by 2023, so they're being pretty aggressive with this. That's
extremely aggressive. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Okay, a couple of things you wanted to get into. The third Friday Democratic Luncheon, what's that all about?
Yeah, so there's a group of people that meet every third Friday here in Columbus at a local restaurant, the Boathouse. They usually have guest speakers in. They've had some great guest speakers. They've had recorder Danny O'Connor, who ran for Congress last year. They had Aftab Purival, who was the first Democrat elected down in Hamilton County, clerk of courts in, I think, 97 years. So they've had some great speakers. And they came to myself and Mark Fluharty, who's the head of the Central Labor Council here, and wanted us to talk a little bit about labor and politics and stuff. So one of the areas that I focused on that I thought was important was basically talking to the members of this group that, a lot of our members are Democrats, but we have some members that are independent, members that are Republicans too, and we have members, we have people on both sides of the aisle that work towards labor's issues. And when we find those people, we try to support them the best that we can. So I kind of recapped last year, a couple of labor's big victories, at least for us in Columbus and Central Ohio. We're obviously, helping Speaker Householder get elected Speaker of the House, because it takes a lot of anti-union legislation off the table, which is beneficial for the unions and our members and their families, but also all working people in Ohio. And then another big victory, I thought, was helping Rob Dorns get elected City Council, IBW 683 member, Chief Legal Counsel for ACT Ohio. So those were the two big ones. So then I segued into this year, and we have one of our members who I'll talk more later probably in the year. His name's Mike Smith. He's one of our delegates. He's running for Licking County Commissioner, and, you know, he's a Democrat. That's going to be tough. That's a pretty dark red county, but he's one of our guys. We're going to do everything we can. We're going to try to help them not only financially with boots on the ground, and we're going to try to support him and see what we can do, and you never know. And then the other one is Mark Johnson, who's head of the Tri-State Building Trade, so he's basically me in South Central Ohio, and he's running for the House of Representatives. He's a Republican. He's running as a Republican in the 92nd District, and if we can help him get elected, He has no primary challenger, so it'll just be the general election. But if we can help him get elected and get another voice of labor in there and one of our own in that Republican caucus at the State House, I think that'll go great with not only defending our issues, prevailing wage, right to work, things like that, but also advancing some of our issues, especially when it comes to workforce development, apprenticeship, pre-apprenticeship, apprenticeship readiness programs, things like that. So this year is going to be a big one. We're really excited about it. Those were a couple of things that I talked about at the third Friday luncheon. And another thing we talked about, and you and I were just chatting off the air, and I was unaware of it because I think you get up earlier than I do, so I didn't see it today. But the PRO Act passed yesterday in the U.S. Congress. So we talked about the PRO Act a little bit. And, you know, I know a lot of Dems have been encouraging Nancy Pelosi, the speaker, to work on that, to get that passed. Now, unfortunately, it's probably going to go to the Senate. It's probably just going to sit there for easily the rest of the year. But who knows? Who knows if the Dems can pick up a few more seats in the Senate? Maybe the Senate can take it up in the next legislative cycle. So
right.
But those are some of the things we talked about. And I tried to stress the importance of some of our issues, like right to work and prevailing wage. And one of the things I really hit on, and I know we talked about a few years ago, and I don't want to bring up a bad memory, but, you know, a lot of people talked about Hillary in 2016, what a bad campaign she won and what a bad candidate she was. There was also an article that you and I discussed that I kind of pulled out of the archives that talked about how counties in the United States where Democrats are running that are right to work counties, so you know, counties in the specific states, they usually start off with about a 3.5-point deficit because the labor is so weak there that it's not only the financial resources, but it's the membership to help them get boots on the ground, help them organize, get people to the polls, get family members to vote, get members to vote, stuff like that. So if you look at the 2016 presidential election, Wisconsin and Michigan went right to work in between the 2012 and 2016 cycle. She lost both those by less than a point each. She lost Arizona by 2.5 points, which is a right to work state. And she lost Florida by, I think it was less than a quarter percentage point, which is a right to work state.
She lost Michigan too.
Yes. So if we could flip those states, she won the general by 3 million votes. She lost the electoral. If you can flip those states and give her those 3.5 points, you know, it's a totally different election. And that was the point I was trying to make to a lot of the Democrats. And the interesting thing is, you know, like I said, we work with Republicans too. I have a lot of Republican friends here in the county, and they heard about, you know, Mark and I speaking and how well it went over, and they're already making plans to have us come in and talk to their local elected, their candidates, and their members of Central Committee here in Franklin County as well, which we'll be happy to do anytime we can get out and educate people about labor's issues.
Yeah, and it's important, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. Larry Householder, for one, that's why he got labor support, because he's got members of unions in his own family, and he's very proud of that, too. He's spoken about that several times. That being said, you've got some lawmakers that just don't get it. And I saw the story, this was a couple of weeks back, it's State Representatives Ron Hood and Bill Dean. They sent.
Yeah, they're taking another whack at abolishing prevailing wage.
Yeah. Yeah, they just don't give up, do they?
No. And the biggest thing too, and it's a much larger discussion, but you and I have talked about it. You know, if you do away with prevailing wage, you're lowering the industry standards and the safety standards in the state of Ohio. And the first couple of things that have been cut in right to work states or states that have done away with prevailing wage is apprenticeship training and education training. Mm-hmm. You talk about all the work that's going on in Cleveland. You just mentioned Sherwin-Williams. We talk about all the work here in Columbus. We talk about all the work statewide. The last thing that we want to do is limit apprenticeship opportunities for people looking to get into the building trades, because then it's going to make us less competitive to keep those Sherwin-Williams, to attract those Facebooks, to attract those Googles, to maintain our college campuses like Ohio State and the others and do that work that needs to be done.
You know, it's funny, more on that story regarding Ron Hood and Bill Dean. I reached out to Hood. I emailed his office. They never responded because what they said in the story, that one local fire chief that they quoted complained.
Yeah.
You saw the story. He complained. Yeah. He complained he wanted a new fire station. He couldn't do it because prevailing wage law raises the cost of the project by more than 30%. Where did they come up with that figure?
It was a made-up figure, because the reason I laughed is, I read that story, but I was also at the State House a couple of years ago when that same firefighter gave testimony to repeal prevailing wage. And anybody who knows anything about construction knows that the cost of material in the last 30 years has far outpaced the cost of labor. So, for an example, in the early 90s when I got the apprenticeship program, I can remember the cost of materials on a job being 60, maybe 65%, the cost of labor being 35, 40%. It's totally different now. Now the cost of material is right around 75%, maybe even as high as 78%. The cost of labor is anywhere from 22 to 25%. So let's say I'm off a little bit, which I'm not. Let's say the cost of labor is 30%. He's basically saying that prevailing wage cost him the opportunity to build that firehouse. His argument would mean then that he had people that were going to do all the work for free, and I heavily doubt that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, these people get attention, and obviously the media picks them up, and then everybody says, oh, well, it's my tax money. I think it's a good idea. Get rid of that prevailing wage, especially if it's going to go up 30%. That's the ridiculous part of the story. But to your point, though, you just have to keep going back and saying, wait a minute, this stuff is not true. It's not true. And when I try to reach out to them, I get no response. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, exactly. They don't want to debate the facts because the facts aren't on their side. The other thing is this, it's a fine line we walk. You know, yes, our members make great living. A great living, great wages, and great benefit, and we get attacked by some that say that those benefits and wages are too much. But also, you know, the benefits and wages are what appeal to the young people, and that's what's going to help get some of these people into the trades because they see the amount of money, the wages, the benefit, the package that they can have with no college debt and all free training and free education with free college credits to boot coming through our apprenticeship. So, you know, I know we've had this discussion before. It's my opinion that a lot of general contractors, end users, construction managers, and customers here in Columbus and Central Ohio, you know, they hold a bigger responsibility for us losing out on a couple of generations of kids getting into the trade more than teachers, more than counselors, more than parents, more than the recession back in the early 2000s. Because they're constantly beating each other's brains in to drive prices down. And it's like I've said to several of them, you get a kid out of high school, you give him 9, 10, 11 bucks an hour on the check with no benefit. And then, you know, we were talking about the weather this morning. You tell him to be outside all day on a day like today or to be outside all day on a 105-degree day, and he's going to be climbing, and he's going to be lifting, and he's going to be doing physical work. I mean, who in their right mind is going to sign up for that?
Exactly.
It's not going to happen.
Very good point. All right, Dorsey, got to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Dorsey Hager, Executive Director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building Trades. Later in the show, Bride Rose Sweeney, that's her name. She's a state rep from Cleveland, and she's got a pretty good idea about voter registration, automatic voter registration in the state of Ohio. Back in a few minutes. Again, you're listening to America's Workforce. Good afternoon and welcome back to America's Workforce, broadcast from Ohio for workers around the entire world and archived on awfradio.com. Before we get back to Dorsey Hague, I just want to give another plug here to the Union Sportsman Alliance. On Tuesday's show, which is archived on AWF Radio, we had Scott Vance on, and Scott's the executive director of the Union Sportsman Alliance, and they've got a benefit coming up at the end of March, March 27th, and if you want to attend, just make your checks payable to the Union Sportsman Alliance. Send them to the Ohio AFL-CIO to the attention of Jeanette Mock, 500 South Front Street, Suite 700. That's in Columbus, Ohio, 43215. And if you just Google Union Sportsman Alliance, you'll get a whole lot of information. In fact, if you purchase a ticket, you are eligible to win an Axis II rifle or a 40-quart Orca cooler. That's if you sponsor a table, all right? But all the details are posted on unionsportsmanalliance.org. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Dorsey Hager. And you are a member of the Union Sportsman Alliance. I know you're an avid sportsman, correct?
Absolutely. And they're a big help here for our dinner that's down here on March 27th in Columbus, the Palmers and Pipefitters Hall. And then they also step up and give me some great things to donate for our Dad's Day shoot that we do on June 6th at Blackwing Shooting Supply. So, yeah, great organization. Proud to be a part of it.
Very good. Virginia, not going right to work. This one baffles me because they got a Democratic governor, and they've had right to work in that state for 70-plus years. They got a Democratic governor. They have a Democratic legislature now, and they had an opportunity to dump right to work, which would be send a message. It certainly would send a message to other states as well, especially states like Michigan, states like Wisconsin, or strong, usually strong union households over there, and very upset with their governors in the past decade here. So what's at play here? Why, they're just chicken to do this kind of thing? What's your thoughts?
I think it's the governor. I think he's afraid. I think you know, he was a doctor. That was his occupation. I don't know if he necessarily knows a lot about right to work or knows a lot about the construction industry. I know that he was supported by a lot of Republicans and a lot of big businesses that helped him get elected. And I know that as soon as the big businesses in October and November saw this kind of blue wave coming in Virginia, I think they started putting pressure on him and got a commitment that if the House and Senate did flip there and turn Democrat, that he would not overturn right to work. And it's the same, you know, tired talking points they've used, make them less competitive, you know, raise wages and stuff, make it harder for them to attract business, which is totally not true. And I know in the first segment we talked about me speaking at the Third Friday Luncheon a few weeks ago, I also touched on this. And, you know, you think about Virginia, and I can't remember off the top of my head what year they became right to work, but a Democratic governor signed the right to work legislation. Then they take over the House and the Senate, become all Democratic. They had, I think the polling there is 72% of the people, the citizens of the Commonwealth support unions. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the polling is in their favor. So you have Democrats that run, and their platform was that when we get elected, we're going to restore union density, raise wages and benefits, and we're going to get rid of right to work. They do that. They Democratic governor, he refuses to follow through with some of the promises that they made. And I don't understand it. And then the other thing I spoke about was, you know, not only is right to work, you know, legal in the state of Virginia, but any of their public employees, whether they're clerical workers, office workers, police, fire, whatever, it is illegal for them to join a union and bargain collectively in the state of Virginia.
Mm.
That's the bit. You know, we talk about Michigan and Wisconsin being right to work, and Indiana has went right to work too. But, you know, a lot of those states, a lot of their union membership has stayed strong because they see the benefit of having the voice of collective bargaining and bargaining together, right? And Virginia, even if a group of people like, you know, who work in the Medicaid office, who are working the health, whatever, if they decided that they wanted to unionize, it's illegal for them to bargain collectively.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's illegal to strike in some cases. And you're probably familiar with the Red for Ed movement when, you know, you saw the wave of teacher strikes in America. They walked out anyway, because what are you going to do? I mean, they haven't gone anywhere because the states, the legislatures, cut the education budgets, and they're working 2-3 jobs, and they went to college for that education. It's ridiculous what's going on here in America.
It is. It is. It's crazy. It is. It just, for teachers and a lot of other people to put in the amount of effort and time that they do and the amount of education they have and then not be able to sustain their families on one job is absolutely horrible.
That's crazy. Well, I would imagine, what are you hearing from your union brothers and sisters over there in Virginia? Are they going to keep pressure on the governor?
They're going to keep putting the pressure on him. You know, and hopefully the legislators, like I said, that are supportive of repealing right to work, hopefully they continue to do so as well.
All right. Okay, one more issue here, the passing of Mark Dempsey. What do you want to say about this, Darcy?
Yeah, so the holiday season was a little sad here. A good friend of mine, a good friend of labor, a good friend here in Columbus, just in general, and a huge pillar of the community, Mark Dempsey, passed away after the Christmas break. He had had some heart issues, was admitted to the hospital, had pneumonia while he was in the hospital, and unfortunately succumbed to that. He was a tremendous friend of mine, tremendous friend of the building trades. He owned Dempsey's restaurant downtown. His family owns it. They're running it. I was in there the other day. Tons of people in there. Business is doing well. But it was just a great place and a great political hangout for people to go and just have a drink, have a great meal. And I'll share a quick story with you about Mark Dempsey. And when I heard of his passing, it's the one that brought a tear to my eye. A good friend of mine, Chris Bender, who works for the local Democratic Party here and works on some campaign. Another good friend of mine, Chris Couples, who works for reporter Danny O'Connor. On election night, you know, we were down at Dempsey's, obviously celebrating a few of the victories. Rob Dorn's one we mentioned early segment. We're sitting at the bar, and I'm not going to tell you what time it was, but it was late, and we're sitting there, and a few of us were hungry, you know, and they had said something. I said, well, the kitchen's closed. And Mark walked by and overheard me, and he's like, you guys want something to eat? You need something? We're like, well, yeah. And he's like, you know, what do you want? Tell me. And he went back there and fired up meals for all of us. And that was the kind of person he was, and that's why his business and his restaurant was successful. His family also took over the historic jury room next door, had renovated it, brought it up to great prominence, have a lot of meetings there and a lot of social events there and dinners and lunches. The Central Labor Council had our Christmas lunch there. And, I mean, he's just, like I said, somebody in the community with his passing that's going to be greatly missed. He did a lot of great things. And he was a Democrat, and everybody knew that. And he worked for some Democrat electeds early on in his career before he got into the restaurant and catering business. But he was 100% bipartisan. Everybody from all political sides would go in there. And I mean, you know, also entertainers, you know, he had Lewis Black that would come in and get a drink with him after doing shows in Columbus. Rudy Giuliani was in Columbus a few years ago giving a speech. He was in there and getting something to eat. He wanted to watch one of the presidential debates, so they set him up in the back room, turned the debates on for him, and that was just the type of guy that Mark was. Next Tuesday, our Commissioner John O'Grady and our former Mayor Mike Coleman are doing a little celebrity bartending down at Dempsey's next Tuesday from 5 to 8. So I know a lot of people will be down there to see them and stuff, but just a huge loss for the whole city and the whole community here in Columbus.
Well, that was a nice tribute you did. Sounds like he was the fabric of the community down there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. St. Patrick's Day, he would go around with the mayor and paint, clover leaves on the street, and there were St. Patrick's Day celebrations down there. It was a huge Irish, you know, obviously, and belonged to the Irish club here. And you're right, just a great guy, and he's going to be sorely missed.
All right, we'll leave it on that note. Dorsey, always a pleasure having you on. ColumbusConstruction.org, Twitter handle BuildCentralOH. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
All right, next month, I hope that we're done talking about ice, freezing rain, and snow, and I hope we're talking about spring training and a Cleveland Indians and Cincinnati Reds summer. How's that?
That's it. That's it. We have the home opener at the end of March, believe it or not. Jeez. Okay.
Oh, geez.
Okay, buddy. You take care. Keep up the fight, okay?
All right. Thank you. Have a great weekend. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Dorsey Hager on our live line. Quick break. Automatic.